Blog Talk Radio.
We want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight to Blog Talk Radio. We are Answers for the Paranormal. Tonight's show is titled Sandy Hook on trial, the epilogue, and we want to put a caveat on that title, Joe, since tonight may not be the final show regarding Sandy Hook, but that's what we planned on, so we just have to see how this show goes on. My name is Bill Posey, and I'm the host for this broadcast tonight, and on the line with me over in Montgo, in the beautiful town of Horsham, Pennsylvania, is my co-host, Joe Marotti. How's it going tonight, Joe?
It's going great, Bill. I'm feeling good. The weather is incredible here in Horsham. It's crisp, clear sunshine. No humidity, as opposed to the last 3 days where I was working outside in 95 degree heat and humidity. And I've changed nationalities. I've gone from Italian, which is light skinned. I've gone to, let's say a dark skinned Mexican. So if that's politically incorrect, you know what? I don't care anymore. But let's just say my skin is a little darker than it was 3 days ago.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. Well, you fit in well, Joe, over there with one of those Latin American countries playing in the, what do they call that? Soccer Bowl or World Bowl or something.
The World Cup?
World Cup. Yeah, there you go, World Cup.
You mean the thing that really we here in America really don't care about, other than the people that have come in the last 10 or 20 years who have countries that they root for other than America? You mean that World Cup?
Yeah, that World Cup.
Okay.
I really don't
care about that.
Me neither, but just something funny. The other night, Sue and I were sitting having dinner over at our favorite spot over there in the shopping center, Uncle Joe's, and there's a quick advertisement without charge. So,
right.
But anyway, we were sitting there and there was a match on, and I looked up and I actually saw that round ball go into that, what is it, 40 foot wide by 30 foot high net.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you miss that? But Joe, I actually saw one go in, and I said to Susan, I was like, I don't believe it. I just saw a goal.
Yeah. Right. It's like seeing a UFO.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, though, because I woke up the other morning a couple of days ago and I heard that two of the teams had played to a 0-0 tie, and I'm thinking,
wonderful.
Boy,
were there any shots
typical.
On goal?
Oh, I have no idea, and I couldn't care less. It's just soccer is, to those of us in Philadelphia, we know the agony. It's like soccer is like hockey and basketball. Oh, wait, and like baseball and football, too.
Yeah, like
we
all
don't
four
care anymore.
That we have in
Yeah, because we know that we have no chance of winning a championship, so cares anymore. So it's funny,
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Joe, you mentioned the weather, and I was out walking Boo-Boo, and first thing that came to my mind was, well, you know, if we had a Chamber of Commerce here in Warwick Township, they would pick this as one of those, what they call the Chamber of Commerce days. You know, like it's like the picture perfect kind of day.
Right.
It is absolutely gorgeous out for in the soup, East Coast. It's we just don't get days like this. So,
yeah. And you know what, Bill, before we go on, let me just say that, man, I am, you know me, Bill, I don't like the kid. I'm terrified. I think Al Gore was right about global warming. I mean, we didn't hit 90 degrees for the first time in my lifetime in May.
Oh.
And we didn't hit 90 degrees until 3 days ago in the middle of June. So, Al, thank you so much for warning us. I mean, I'm going to be on the lookout for melting ice caps and global warming. Really, thank you, Al.
Yeah, I guess those polar bears up in on the North Pole, Joe, can put away their surfboards for the time being.
They can. And their counterparts, the black bear, have been spotted here in Horsham recently, and also in Montgomery County. I don't know what this has to do with global warming, but maybe they're able to read and they are able to understand English, and they're listening to NPR and all the warnings about global warming. And man, we got to stop doing what we're doing because we're destroying the Earth. I got a news flash for you. That the Earth is being destroyed not because of what we do with our trash and what we do with our fuel.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be destroyed because of sin.
Amen, brother.
So, okay, we can move on from that.
Yeah, that was a little icebreaker in itself, Joe. Just to get the cobwebs off my microphone.
There you go.
It's
really
been such a long
time.
When's
the last time we were on the air?
Was it April?
You're asking me?
Or March? I don't. All I know is we put Sandy Hook on trial, and then it just seems like we haven't been able to get back to this final episode. Actually, it's a good thing that we haven't, Joe, because you've been able to uncover so much more information in those few months. And, you know, Joe and I were talking before we came on the broadcast tonight, and Joe made the comment that after this broadcast here, if anyone has any doubts, they'll just never get it. So,
That's so true, Bill.
Yeah.
If anybody listens to tonight's broadcast and says, yeah, but I still think it happened, then you know what? Go ahead and believe. There's only so much researchers like myself can do to prove to you that Sandy Hook was a ruse. How it was pulled off, I don't know. I really don't know. But all I know is I've got a million questions and a million areas of speculation that just would leave one believing that, you know what? Maybe I ought to think about this again.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got other people out there who are defenders of the Sandy Hook story. Maybe I ought to mention them by name. I've had some run-ins with them on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Nothing that they've said or shown in their videos or their posts have convinced me, have changed my mind at all.
Yeah.
One of them, C.W. Wade. Yeah, C.W. Wade. Yeah, he's famous for...
is that a cowboy, Joe? Or?
Oh, I don't know what he is. But anyway, he is famous for coming up with alleged evidence, you know, all derived from police reports, which we're going to get into tonight, you know.
Yeah.
And the other guys, Chris Hernandez, he's an Iraq war veteran. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a job, pal. I ain't going to bow down before a soldier no more than I'm going to bow down before a janitor. Okay. You want to think that you can bring your military experience and military, name into the picture to gain respect, and therefore I believe what you're saying about Sandy Hook? No, that's not going to happen. It still comes down to evidence, okay?
Right.
You and all those others who have defended this Sandy Hook narrative, you haven't produced anything that would change my mind, and apparently have not changed many others who know that Sandy Hook did not happen as we were told it happened. So that's where we are now.
Right. And, you know, one of the other things that you keep bringing up, Joe, and I think it really needs to, you know, to be spoken about tonight, especially, is that the charge keeps being made to you on blogs and different posts is that you need to prove that it didn't happen.
And, right.
And why is the burden of proof on you, Joe?
It's not on me.
Yeah.
It's not on me because the burden of proof, according to American jurisprudence and American criminal law, is that it's the burden of the state of Connecticut to prove that Adam Lanza carried out the crimes that they say he did on 12/14/12 in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. It's their burden. And therefore, you who defend the official story, it's your burden to prove to me that that story is an actuality, that it really happened. It's not my burden to prove that it didn't happen. And this is these clowns are mistaken. That's what these bozos are trying to instill in me, that it's my burden to prove. If they ask, hey, where is your proof that it was a hoax? Oh, I've got a lot of that. I've got a lot of that. But before that, let's say, where is your proof that it actually happened? Since there was no criminal trial, there were no public hearings, there was no grand jury impaneled. Have we gone so far away from the Constitution that you can allow clowns like C.W. Wade and Chris Hernandez to run wild with their accusations against what they call conspiracy theorists? It's the easiest thing in the world to do. You question Sandy Hook, oh, you're a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist. Easiest thing in the world to do.
And plays right into their end game.
And anyone listening tonight, you want to go to C.W. Wade's material? Go ahead to it. If any of it convinces you that Sandy Hook was real, then email me and tell me about it. Go to Chris Hernandez. He goes by Chris Hernandez, the author. Go to him and see his evidence on Sandy Hook, okay? And if it convinces you, then email me and let me know about it, okay? So far, these two guys are foremost in the defense of the Sandy Hook narrative. Why? I don't know. Are they shills? I don't know. Are they paid to lie? I have no idea. There's no way for me to know that. All I know is they haven't convinced me with what they've produced. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there listening would go to their websites and view the material that they have and are convinced that what they've produced is evidence to the degree that it would be equal to the evidence that a prosecutor in the state of Connecticut would have against Adam Lanza, then go ahead and prove it to me, because it's not my burden to prove that this crime didn't happen. It's your burden to prove that it did happen. That's why that's the way the criminal justice system works in America, in case you didn't know. So this is what I meant by, you got to reel me in, Bill, because the veins are popping to the right and left of my eyes and before my ears. And we better move on before you lose me.
I got you, brother. All right, deep breath here. You know, Joe, it's our ministry is Answers for the Paranormal, and our website, www.answersfortheparanormal.org, and some new listeners tuning in may be asking the question, well, paranormal, and you're doing a show about Sandy Hook. I don't understand.
Right.
I don't get the connection. And, you know, Joe, every time someone says that to me, I think of two scripture passages that I just want to start out with before we get into the bulk of what we want to talk about tonight. And the first comes from the Gospel of John, and John 3:20 states, everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. And the other scripture passage is from the book of Ephesians, and Ephesians 5:11 says, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them.
Mm.
Expose
Amen.
Them.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, our ministry may be about the paranormal, and we go about exposing the deceptions in that realm.
Right.
You know, such as aliens and ghosts. And, you know, if anyone wants to hear those kind of episodes, they can find them very easily on our website. But, you know, this is something now that has gone on since January of 2013, when we did episode number one on this subject of Sandy
right.
Hook.
Yeah.
And following that episode, Joe, it became more apparent to us that there was something really dark about what happened there in Connecticut.
Right.
And there were things even darker about the people that are involved in that town. And
right.
And the darkness, as both you and I experienced, you twice, myself one time,
right.
We experienced it by actually going into the town of Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
And, Joe, you know, I'll never forget being there, because it was the most eerie feeling I've ever had about a town. And so why is a ministry that's involved in the paranormal doing a show on Sandy Hook? This is the reason. Because of the darkness that is over this whole catastrophe that is Sandy Hook. And
right.
Joe and I are compelled by the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, to expose this evil. So
that's right.
That is really the reason that we continue to do these episodes. And this is, Joe, episode number six. And
yes,
never,
it is.
Never in my wildest imagination
nope.
would I have envisioned that we would be doing six broadcasts on this topic. But it
nope,
just seems
no.
as though it's something that that keeps stirring up within us that we can't put to rest. And
right.
Hopefully tonight we can, and we'll wait for the time that this darkness and this evil is exposed. And,
yes.
You know, as I've said to you on numerous occasions, Joe, I think it's going to be. And that day that it is, shortly thereafter, Joe and I will be back on the air regarding this topic.
Will we ever?
Yeah. But until that time comes for the next 2 hours tonight, we hope that you continue listening, either live or this will be available on podcast as of midnight tonight. So if you're listening live and you know someone that needs to hear this, let them know that they can either go to blogtalkradio.com/BillP222, or they can go to our website, www.answersfortheparanormal.org, to listen to the podcast. And with that, Joe, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, and you can get into the preface part of what you want to talk about tonight.
Well, do we want to you know what? What I want to mention, Bill, is the bulk of tonight's program is going to be the state's attorney's report, Stephen Sadensky's report, his 44-page report released on the 25th of November last year, 2013. The bulk of tonight's program is going to be the scrutiny of that report.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that report, there is a 231-page appendix to that report. And
yeah,
there will be a future program, you know, Bill, unless unless this is exposed somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, I wake up in the morning and KYW says Sandy Hook has been exposed. Sandy Hook is reported to be a fraud, a ruse. You know, then obviously we're not going to do the show. In the future, unless that happens, we will have a program that will deal with the 231-page appendix final report to Stephen J. Sadensky's report,
yeah.
44-page report released on 11/25/13.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight we will, however, delve into that appendix and go over in detail the response to Sandy Hook Elementary School by Newtown and Connecticut State Police. And I'm telling you, Bill, for those of you in our area, and there's nothing comical about this, really, there isn't. But I'll tell you what, I got to be honest. If you know, anyone can say anything they want about me, but I'm genuine, so I'm going to be genuine here. As I'm reading this report of the Newtown Police and the Connecticut State Police response to Sandy Hook Elementary School, those of you in this area in Philadelphia will remember back in the 70s, there was a morning children's show host named Wee Willie Weber, and he used to have a episode or a portion of his program that was musical chairs, and the small kids would walk around the chairs and to music. There was this certain music that would be playing. You remember that, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Remember it well.
Yeah. And, you know, the music stops, and they sit down, and whoever's left standing is out of the game.
Yeah.
When I'm reading the report of the police response, that's what I'm hearing in my mind. I'm seeing Connecticut State – I'm seeing Newtown Police – first arrivers just going around the school indiscriminately.
Yeah.
Connecticut State Police. No rhyme or reason. I'm hearing this theme in my head. So we're going to go over that tonight, and I'm going to be very specific in my critique of these two groups of law enforcement. And also, Bill, what I want to do is I also want to mention at this time that you mentioned earlier that this is our sixth program.
Yeah.
Dedicated to Sandy Hook. That doesn't cover the amount of material that I have amassed regarding Sandy Hook. I have so much material that it would be impossible for us to get to on any broadcast or any combination of broadcasts. So as a result of that, I will be, as time allows, blogging in an attempt to expose of the material and the contradictions, which are voluminous, Bill, and discrepancies within the whole story of Sandy Hook. So I'm going to try to detail everything, all of my questions and all of my scrutiny and speculation, everything that others have done this as well. I just haven't taken the time because, you know why? I haven't had the time. I haven't had the energy. But this, after tonight, knowing that I have all this leftover material, I can't just leave it on my bookshelves here. So I'm going to translate from my bookshelves to my computer so that
mm-hmm.
everyone can see everything that I have. And they can comment on it, or they can correct me, which is fine. You know what? Again, with verification, if you want to correct me. So that's in the upcoming months ahead. So that's where we stand.
Yeah. You know, Joe, I got my hands finally on this appendix that you're talking about. And as I started going through it, I could see exactly what you were talking about a few nights ago when we were talking, and I'll tell you, my head starts spinning
mm-hmm.
just looking at some of the, You know, I can't believe, Joe, that these are actual police documents. These are public record documents, and I wonder who has actually looked at them. Because
not many, Bill.
Yeah. It's amazing some of the things that I've read in here, and we'll get to some of them tonight as we go through this broadcast. So,
and you know what, Bill? My inclination is to say shame on me, because it was not up until 3 days ago that I actually accessed the appendix to Sudensky's report,
mm-hmm.
the 231-page appendix. But man, you know what? I have a life. I have a wife. I have three children. I have one child that's in Moscow. You know, two children that still live at home. So there just isn't enough time. I've got to pay bills. So I can't do this 24 hours a day. You know, I'm not paid to do this. This is all on my time. So I'm not going to apologize to anyone for not getting to this report, this appendix, until 2 or 3 days ago. But as I said, now, having gotten to it and seen the absurdity of it, in addition to the 44-page Sudensky report released in 2013, November 25th.
Yeah.
Everything will be exposed that I can see within the report. You know, not everybody's going to, even those who know, and believe me, I'm in contact with many who know that it's a ruse, know that something is not right about Sandy Hook, that it was some sort of a drill that went live, or an integrated, coordinated event between multiple agencies for a number of speculative reasons. But, you know, even they haven't gone through and taken the time that I've taken. Why that is, I'll tell you, Bill, seriously. The only reason that I can come up with is that the scripture that you previously related, that we are to expose evil, expose evil. And I'm driven to expose evil, whether it's, you know, evolutionary teaching within the church, whether it's totally contradictory to scripture, whether it's this recent wave of caving in by churches to homosexuality again.
Wow.
Contradictory to scripture. You know, we're to expose evil, period. So I want to expose the evil. And as you alluded to earlier, Bill, if someone says, why are you guys doing this? You're a Christian paranormal ministry. Well, you know what? You can't accomplish Sandy Hook without demonic enablement. I'll repeat.
Yep.
You cannot accomplish. This December will be 2 years. You cannot accomplish that without demonic enablement. You can't cover up. You can't cover all your bases. You can't blind people's eyes to the truth. You can't keep them in the dark without spiritual enablement. That's what's happening. That's why we're doing this. You know, this isn't a career for us, but it is. At this point in time, it was only 12. It hasn't even been 2 years, 2.5 years, 1.5 years. I'm sorry, 1.5 years. So it's still pretty darn fresh. And when you look at all of the evidence, it all points to Satan. Bill. Bottom line, to Satan. And I got news for all of you out there. I don't care how this sounds. I really don't. I don't care. All of you who are defending the official narrative of Sandy Hook, you are being employed by the devil. I repeat, you are being employed by the devil as propaganda ministers, because this did not happen as we were told it happened. The devil has reasons for pulling off Sandy Hook. And you, in defending the official story, are his helpers. You can deny that till you're blue in the face. I don't care if you're ignorant of the truth. It's the truth. And I don't apologize for saying it. You know, Bill, you never apologize for telling the truth.
Right.
You never apologize for telling the truth. The truth is the truth. It's not subject to opinion. It's not subject to assailants. It's not subject to anyone who would come against it. It stands on its own, and it's unshakable, whether you're talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ, that man is lost and he needs to be forgiven of his sins, and it's only by Jesus Christ that that can happen. Or, you know what, truth isn't checked at the cross. Truth crosses the globe. 2 + 2 = 4 is truth. No one can deny it. Whatever happened on 12/14/12 is truth. No one can deny it. That's what we're trying to get to. That's why I don't apologize for what we're doing.
Yeah, well said, Joe. All right, I guess at this point, Joe, we're going to get into the icebreaker portion of the broadcast.
Right.
And this is something that Joe and I have developed along the history of our broadcast, where we ask each other a question that neither one of us know what the other is going to pose to us. So these questions, as they're asked, we're coming up with the answers right off the top of our head. So
right.
It does make for interesting segues into what we really want to talk about tonight. So,
sure does.
So this is the icebreaker portion, and how do you want to work this, Joe? You want to ask yours first, or you want me to go?
I'll tell you what, why don't you ask me first?
Okay. All right, let's do that. All right, Joe, it took me some time to really think about something that would, as you said to me, loosen you up and get you in.
I think we're way past that.
Yeah,
point.
You were. We're way past that. So I don't even know if this question's relevant.
It's okay. It's okay.
I think you're pretty loose, Joe. You're ready to come in from the bullpen and throw bullets.
I'm very lubricated. You got that right, brother.
But anyway, here goes. Joe, there's an old saying that goes with a lot of things, and you know, it's something that I taught my son when he was growing up. I said, if there's something that happens and you want to know what the real reason behind it is, just follow the money.
Right.
Follow the money.
Yeah.
So Joe, with SHE in our crosshairs here, and
yeah,
this statement of just follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think regarding Sandy Hook with that statement? Follow the money.
Well, you know what? This, I'm going to expound on this later on in the broadcast tonight. So I think my initial answer is going to be very brief. I don't think that any one individual or any group of individuals will agree to anything that is heinous unless there is some reward for their cooperation. And it appears to me, and I will substantiate this later in the broadcast, that the participants in Sandy Hook, whether they be parents, whether they be law enforcement, whether they be political figures, whether they be actors, they were rewarded financially. This is something that nobody's going to be able to say, oh, you know what, you're wrong about that. No. I've got documentation. I've got documentation that they were rewarded for their complicit behavior in the ruse of Sandy Hook. So it comes down to, I want you to do this for me. It's evil. And if you get caught, it may mean jail or even worse. But if you don't, guess what? You're not going to have to worry about money for a long time, if ever. So what do you say? So Sandy Hook was in the planning a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time, for at least a couple years, if not more, probably more. So the financial rewards have been substantiated, as again I will prove tonight. There has to be some return for an agreement of, you want to talk about conspiracy? Those guys want to call me a conspiracy theorist? This was a conspiracy. You in Sandy Hook and Newtown and Connecticut conspired with whoever, the federal government, federal agencies, to pull off Sandy Hook for a financial reward. The reward I can document. There's no question about that. Now, the only thing that others can say is that, well, that's not why they did it. Well, I'm saying that's why they did it. Again, you prove me wrong. I don't have to prove you wrong.
Right.
So that's my brief answer, Bill, if you can say that was brief.
Yeah. I think that was, relatively speaking, brief.
For me, right.
Yeah, for you. And you know what, Joe? Just to follow up on that.
Yeah.
Just so that we make a point here, and it's understood. There's two words that normally go along with this. You know what words I'm thinking of? Whenever you
two words.
Whenever you have a reward for something that you don't want exposed, what do they call that?
Okay. Hush money.
Hush money. Thank you very much. Yeah. And you know what, Joe? I hear a lot of times the debunkers saying, you mean to tell me that everybody, that no one's tripped up yet? On and on. And, well, people will do a lot of things for money, Joe. You know, the scriptures tell us that money is not evil, but money is the root of all evil.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And you know what, Bill? It's only been a year and a half. So, again,
a little over 18 months.
Right. Responding to these alleged debunkers, conspiracy of this magnitude would have to be concealed by a multitude of people. It's only been 18 months, pal. You know, give it some time. If they don't start singing like songbirds, we out here who are continuing to research and putting the pressure on will force them to sing like songbirds.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's money is definitely a part of this whole thing. And you know what, Bill? That's only what can be seen on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into speculation now. Leave the people who were higher up in the food chain. Let's talk about maybe Governor Malloy, First Select Woman Pat Lodra, Representative Chris Murphy of Connecticut, of that area, which Newtown falls under his representation area. Something else may have been offered as well.
Mm. And let's not forget, Joe, the maestro or the conductor of this whole thing. And that is a federal office. And I allude to the office of the Attorney General of the United States of America.
Eric Holder.
Yeah.
That's right. Who was in Newtown promoting what's the name of it? I can't think of it off the top of my head. Oh, Project Longevity.
Longevity, yeah.
Project Longevity. If my memory serves me correctly, and I have it in my bedroom is 12 feet by 18 feet. I have it somewhere in here. I just can't find it. I think it was November 27th, less than a month before 12/14/12 alleged massacre at Sandy Hook. Mr. Holder was in Connecticut with Connecticut state officials, promising them federal money that they certainly received if they would go along with this Project Longevity program. So much to consider, Bill. And as I've been saying, we've been saying, and many others have been saying from the beginning, there's too many unanswered questions. There's too many strange coincidences. There's too many areas where things just don't make sense. Things don't add up. And I'm including law enforcement that are saying that as well. Not just Wolfgang Holbig, but others who have entered the realm of Sandy Hook unbelievers, experts in ballistics, experts in logistics. We're not even going to get to them tonight that would have said that there's no way that Adam Lanza could have achieved the kill rate as opposed to wounded that he actually did. So it's just too much to ignore.
Yeah.
You ready for my question?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be, brother.
Okay. Here we go. Okay, Bill. Now this is in the thinking that the hopeful thinking, prayerful thinking that Sandy Hook will be exposed at some point in the near future, hopefully, if not in the long-term future, somewhere, will be exposed as a non-event, that it didn't really happen, nobody really died. Bill, what would lead you to believe that Sandy Hook would be exposed as a hoax if past events such as JFK's assassination, RFK's assassination, 9/11, Oklahoma City, and others have not? What would lead you to believe Sandy Hook would be the first, as far as a conspiracy that came from the highest levels, that would be exposed? Because it's not like we can open a textbook and say such and such killed JFK.
Mm-hmm.
Again, do I have to really repeat that Lee Harvey Oswald was not convicted of killing John F. Kennedy? Okay, he wasn't even arraigned. Okay, he wasn't even arraigned. So don't tell me that Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK. He wasn't given a trial. So what would lead you to believe that Bill, this Sandy Hook would be any different?
That's a really good question, Joe, and it's one that I've been asking myself over and over again. And I have to be honest, to come up with one direct answer has been difficult, even in my own mind, as I, as I've just been looking over this whole whole mess,
right?
That is Sandy Hook. But Joe, I'll just say this much: there are certain times in history where evildoers have been brought to justice. And, you look at the atrocities of World War II and,
right.
And the things that, happened, camps and such. And right. You know, I was reading a story, I think it was yesterday, in my favorite gossip rag, the Daily News, which is printed in Philadelphia.
Right.
And there was a little article in there about a man in northeast Philadelphia who had been arrested along with his wife when they were coming back to their home by U.S. Marshals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was being charged with war crimes. And we'll face an extradition hearing sometime, I think in the fall it is. And, you know, and they were just going through his history a little bit. And,
right.
You know what, Joe, I don't know if he really was involved. He admits that he mm-hmm. was there, but he says that he didn't have any direct, you know, involvement with
mm-hmm.
the slaughter of Jews. But irregardless, he was there. And you know what, Joe? Sometimes things aren't brought to light for, what, 1945? We're talking 69 years.
Yeah.
Before someone like this man was his evil was brought to light. And maybe we're looking at something similar like that with Sandy Hook. I don't know. But, you know, the scriptures tell us that your sin will find you out.
That's right.
It tells us that, you know, the things that are done in darkness are eventually
yes.
brought to light.
That's right.
I just have to trust, Joe, that in this situation, that somehow, in some way, someone is going to break this case to where the evildoers are brought to justice. And, you know, all we can do is pray about that and
right.
And continue to, you know, just ask the questions.
Right, right.
You know, I've been thinking, Joe, the whole time, even, you know, going back in my mind over these six broadcasts and everything. And, you know, I mean, we've said a lot of things, some right, others wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look back at our first broadcast, and, you know, this is a situation that has really tugged on America's heartstrings.
That's right.
You know what I mean, Joe?
Absolutely.
I remember that morning when I heard it and I texted you. And
mm-hmm.
who when they hear that first grade students had been murdered, what that does to someone's emotions.
Yes.
And then following that, the constant media barrage, and even when the questions started popping up at the very beginning, you know, there the whole time the media was telling us, you know, no, this is what happened. Here's
right.
who did it. This person did this. They found this. They did that. But never any concrete evidence or proof shown to us.
That's right.
Just that we were told and we were to accept it. And you know mm-hmm. what, Joe? That's very thin. That's something that can only hold up for so long.
Right.
So, you know, why we haven't found out conclusively who killed JFK or why the Twin Towers were brought down or, you know, why RFK or, you know, the Reverend Martin Luther King, why all those people, you know, were killed. Some of those maybe will never be brought to light completely.
Right.
But I don't know what it is, but I just think that this is a case that is just, you know, it's not built on anything solid. It's almost like a teetering, you know, matchbox kind of building that's that's trying to be held up in the special interests of protecting our kids.
Yes.
You know, the it's being held up by, you know, we need to do something about the guns. It's the guns. You know, we need to do something about that. So you have enough that it's trying to keep the outside walls together from crumbling, Joe.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's enough. And I really don't think that that it's going to stand the test of time. And you know what? That's the best answer I can come up with. I don't know if I made any sense, but
yeah, you did. You did.
There's just something that I feel that about this, that it's just going to crumble like a matchbox eventually.
You know, Bill, and I can't really give you any concrete evidence that would lead one to believe that it is going to be revealed in this lifetime at some point as a hoax, Sandy Hook. But something you said did strike me as a scripture states that your sin will find you out. And I, you know, we all look for comfort in anything. I am comforted to know that for sure, there's no question in my mind that the evil that was perpetrated on 12/14/12 in Sandy Hook paid by the perpetrators at some point, whether it's in this life, I don't know. I really hope so. And that may be something personal to me. I want to see it happen now, here and now. I want people to say, wow, you mean that didn't really happen? You know, maybe that's just me, something selfish within me that I want to see it happen now. But I do know ultimately that those people will pay for what happened in Sandy Hook on 12/14/12. And I was going to say something else in response to what you said, but I can't remember what that was right now. So we better move on before I start babbling.
All right, Joe. well, as we stated at the beginning of this broadcast, this is Sandy Hook on trial. And we want to put the report of the Connecticut State Attorney Stephen Sadensky, his lengthy, and I'll put it in quotation marks, report regarding the official story and what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School. We're going to continue that from our last broadcast, putting his report on trial. But Joe, before we get to that, why don't we take a short break? Because we're coming up on the first hour, so this will be a short 4-minute break, and you can stretch your legs or grab something to drink real quick, Joe, and and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Okay.
And Joe, this is a different mix of our theme that we opened up with tonight from the movie Inception.
Yeah.
So. I hope you like this too. So here goes,
sounds
and we'll
good.
Be back. We'll be back in about 4.5 minutes.
Great.
And we are back from our break. It's 8:34 on the East Coast of the United States. We are Answers for the Paranormal on Block Talk Radio. And the show title for tonight is Sandy Hook on Trial, the epilogue, we hope. And we want to get into now to the to the main part of our broadcast tonight, on the continuation of our trial of the official report from Stephen Sadensky. And with that, I'm going to ask my partner here, Joe Marodi, to take over. So, Joe, why don't you go ahead with what you have tonight?
Sure. I'll tell you what I want to do before that, Bill.
Yeah.
I want to give a little background on an article I'm going to read.
Okay.
For those of you who have been involved at all in following the Sandy Hook story from either side, you will probably be familiar with a name, James Tracy. He is professor of media at Florida Atlantic University, and he became well known as a result of his refusal to just accept the official story when it first happened, and is probably most well known for his being talked about by Anderson Cooper of CNN. And I remember seeing Mr. Tracy in the hallway being interviewed briefly about why he doesn't believe that Sandy Hook really happened. And what stuck in my mind was his saying, and it is even more profound now than it was then, that his very words were, "I believe that we have been conditioned to be duped." He's talking about Americans believing everything that they read and hear in the mainstream media. So Mr. Tracy, and I'm not sure whether his website originated from that point or it was actually before that, but he has a website called Memory Hole Blog. And there's a story behind the name itself. I won't go into that now. But he deals with topics of politics and conspiracy and, you know, things that are very hot topics of the day. And certainly Sandy Hook falls under that paradigm. I have been following the articles that he has posted himself. He also has guests who post articles on the Memory Hole blog site itself. So in response to a recent article where Mr. Wolfgang Holbig and a number of other people went to Newtown, Connecticut to confront the Newtown School Board with a bunch of questions as to what happened on 12/14/12, Mr. Tracy posted this article, and I responded to it. Here is exactly, word for word, my response, my post that day in response to Mr. Holbig's trip to Newtown. Here's exactly what I said, and then I'm going to read a response from someone to my post. My words are this: I may be tipping my hand, but at this point in my life, I really don't care. You see, I have a helper who is going with me, capital H. Let truth be honored above all else. At some point this summer, I intend to visit Sandy Hook for a third time. This time, I am not going in an attempt to interview officials. I am planning to knock on doors, just doors to ordinary houses, hopefully filled with ordinary people. I am going to ask questions regarding what, if anything, ordinary Sandy Hook residents know about 121412. I will be utterly respectful. I will move on if directed to do so. My hope and prayer is that some human being will be compelled by his or her own humanity to say something that up to this point they haven't. I truly do not know whether this trip will reveal anything of substance. I only know that I am compelled to go, and that if I don't go, an uneasiness within my own spirit will fester. As a Bible-believing Christian, I may be placing some distance between myself and others here who reject the hidden in plain sight absurdity of Sandy Hook. But rest assured, within me, there is no other agenda than the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I am fully aware that an arrest is a very real possibility. There is no false bravado here. If I am arrested, I may abuse myself verbally for being a fool. But again, the alternative is something that I just refuse to live with. And that was posted. I posted that on May 8th of 2000 of this year, 2014. And the next day, someone who identifies themselves as Sandy. You know, imagine that, Sandy Hook, Sandy.
Hmm. Original.
This individual says, and you know, the fact that they responded to me the next day. And I've never seen this person before on Memory Hole blog. This is the first time I've ever seen them respond. It tells me that they're monitoring what is being said on Memory Hole blog, which is a treasure for people who understand that things aren't really what they seem to be, whether it's Sandy Hook or anything else. It's a place where people think and post their thoughts, you know. People that, well, I shouldn't say, I don't want to go any further than that. But anyway, let me respond by stating what this Sandy says in response to me.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Sandy says. I love how you're deciding who's too crazy. And I'll stop there for a second. This person is responding to people on Memory Hole blog who had a problem with Wolfgang Halbig's trip to Newtown.
Mm-hmm.
They were wondering whether this guy was a shill himself, whether this guy was detrimental to the cause of exposing Sandy Hook. Some were saying that it was crazy to have him go there. So this person says, I love how you're deciding who's too crazy. News for you. You're all nuts. Next time, we won't keep it quiet. I'll stop again. What this person, Sandy, is referring to, the school board, the Newtown school board meeting that Wolfgang Halbig and a number of others attended, that they announced that they were going to go there. So this person says, next time we won't keep it quiet. We didn't want a riot of angry people. Next time we'll tell everyone, they'll be pissed. You know, and this is my response to that. It just in my mind, it's very odd that the residents of Newtown would be pissed regarding people asking questions about 121412, but no one was pissed that I saw on the day of the alleged killings. Parents, teachers, law enforcement, medics, firefighters, you know.
Yeah.
No one was shedding any tears. There were people laughing.
Mm-hmm.
No one looked like they had just suffered a tragedy beyond description. Okay, that's my response to him saying, next time we'll tell everyone they'll be pissed. Okay, I'll go on now. Miss Sandy says, I can guarantee any Looney Tune who spouts abuse will lose some teeth. Joe, compelled by humanity and Bible-believing, in quotations, Marody, referring to me, please, please, please knock on my door. Please. Oh, And don't knock on the wrong door. We're home of the NSSF, that's the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and have plenty of gun owners, some who have sons and daughters who still can't sleep. Me, I'll use a baseball bat. So this person is threatening me that if I come there and ask questions in a respectful manner, I better not knock on this person's door because they'll be waiting for me with a baseball bat and others will be waiting for me with a gun. Okay, this is how you want to portray yourself, Newtown? This is someone speaking for you?
Yeah.
And then 12 days later, Bill, this same Sandy says this on another post. In response to Jim Tracy wanted to ban this person from Memory Hole Blog because you don't threaten people on mm-hmm. Memory Hole Blog. And Jim indicated this person's IP address did not indicate that they were from Newtown. And mm-hmm. so here's the response to that. And where does my IP indicate that I am now, Super Sleuth? We call them airplanes. So this person, and I asked you about this, Bill, this person is claiming that they sent this blog post from an airplane. So how would that show up from an airplane? I don't know the answer to that. So let me move on. Although it might be hard to understand for people who live their lives in their basements, explain to me how we should defend ourselves from people who are constantly poking sticks in our wounds. Do you want us to simply take it? You know, I didn't respond to this, but my response now to this person would be, how are we poking sticks in your wounds? If people were descending on Newtown who don't believe the official story and asking questions, it would have made the mainstream media news outlets. It hasn't. Mm-hmm. All of this has been confined to the internet. So this person says, explain to me how we should defend ourselves when people are constantly poking sticks in our wounds. Do you want us to simply take it? Not going to happen. End of that post. So that's the type of people that we're dealing with if this person is from Newtown. So that's a little background on the – and I would encourage people to visit Jim Tracy's Memory Hole blog website where – you will see individuals that were far that are far more intellectual and discerning than I am, who have made their case that Sandy Hook did not happen as we were told that it happened. So as that is done and said with, I will take a sip of water and move on to Stephen J. Sadensky's report. And Bill, I don't know, let's see, it's 8:47. We have an hour and
13 minutes.
An hour and 13 minutes. Let's see if we can get through this. I don't want to just fly through this. So if you have at any point or any time any questions or you need something to be clarified, I want you to stop me because the same question or clarification need may be in the mind of those who are listening. So here I go. And this is continued if the case is that someone would be following along with me. This is on page 9 of Sadensky's report. And again, I will go through this as quickly as I possibly can. The heading is Sandy Hook Elementary School Incident and Response. Incident. On the morning of December 14th, 2012, the shooter parked his 2010 Honda Civic next to a no parking zone outside of Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. Now I'm going to stop. Whenever I say stop, that means I'm going to stop the commentary, statements of Sadensky and go to my comment. I'm going to stop there. The shooter parked his 2010 Honda Civic next to a no parking zone outside of Sandy Hook Elementary School, Newtown, Connecticut. There is no eyewitness testimony to corroborate this. So we can't say when the car was parked there or for how long. You know, Bill, this is, as we said, this is Sandy Hook on trial, the epilogue.
Yeah.
This is what would happen in a courtroom situation. If I were a defense attorney, I would say, where is the eyewitness testimony that this car was parked there time?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how long it was parked there. So that's how I'm going to approach this. Shortly after 9:30 a.m., he approached the front entrance to the school. My comment, there is no eyewitness testimony to corroborate this. Sedensky, he was armed with a Bushmaster model XM15 E2S rifle, also Bushmaster rifle, a Glock 20 10mm pistol, and a Sig Sauer P226 9mm pistol and a large supply of ammunition. Again, there is no eyewitness testimony to corroborate this. The doors to the school, this is Sedensky, the doors to the school were locked, as they customarily were at this time. The school day having already begun, the shooter proceeded to shoot his way into the school building through the plate glass window to the right of the front lobby doors. My comment, there is no way to corroborate this. No eyeball witnesses saw the shooter, quote unquote, shoot his way into the school. Sedensky, the main office staff reported hearing noises and glass breaking at approximately 9:35 a.m. and saw the shooter, a white male with a hat and sunglasses, come into the school building with a rifle-type gun. The shooter walked normally, did not say anything, and appeared to be breathing normally. He was seen shooting the rifle down the hallway. My question, who were these eyeball witnesses? Where exactly were the bodies of Hochsprung and Sherlock found? Because we were told that Hochsprung and Sherlock exited out of conference room 9 and lunged at the shooter.
Yeah.
These main office staff should have witnessed Hochsprung and Sherlock being shot, because main office in Sandy Hook School has large windows and is separated from conference room 9 only by the principal's office and closet. Continuing, this is Sedensky. Just down the hallway from the main office in the direction of the shooter was to be seen firing a 9:30 a.m. planning and placement team meeting was being held in room 9, a conference room. It was attended by Principal Dawn Hochsprung and school psychologist Mary Sherlock, together with a parent and other school staff. My comment, we have been told that Natalie Hammond was one of the persons attending this conference. But who exactly were the others?
Yeah.
Sedensky. As the staff member left the room, this would be Natalie Hammond, the staff member heard gunshots and saw Mrs. You know, this is comical, Bill. They mention Hochsprung and Sherlock, right? But they don't mention it here that the wounded was Natalie Hammond. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. As the staff member left the room.
Actually, Joe, let me. Even before that, he states that both the principal and school psychologist, that would be Dawn Hochsprung and Mary Sherlock, left the room, followed shortly after by a staff member. So that is the person that you're talking about.
Yes.
And then it says, after leaving the room, Mrs. Hochsprung yelled, "Stay put."
Right.
Okay, to who?
Well, we're gonna get to that, and my immediate response is, it would be to Natalie Hammond and the other people in conference room number 9.
But we're told that Natalie left the room shortly after, right?
Right. Why didn't she stay put?
Yeah.
Yeah. good question, Bill. This is Sedensky. As the staff member left the room, the staff member heard gunshots and saw Mrs. Hossbrung and Mrs. Sherlock fall down in front of the staff member. My comment, the staff member here was in the hallway. She heard gunshots, saw Hossbrung and Sherlock fall down in front of her, but it does not say the staff member saw the shooter shoot the victims. You understand what I'm saying, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
The staff member heard gunshots and saw Mrs. Hossbrung and Mrs. Sherlock fall down in front. She was an eyewitness to the shooting. But it does not say the staff member saw the shooter shoot the victims. Sedensky, the staff member felt a gunshot hit the staff member's leg. Once down, the staff member was struck again by additional gunfire but laid still in the hallway. Not seeing anyone in the hallway, the staff member called back into the room, into room 9, and held the door shut. Okay. This staff member was struck twice by gunfire, right? But did not see the shooter, even though she was apparently right behind Hossbrung and Sherlock. Mm-hmm. This person was shot twice and had the wherewithal to play dead? That's what it says here, Bill. Once down, the staff member was struck again by additional gunfire, but laid still in the hallway. She was shot twice. She had the wherewithal to play dead through the pain and then crawled back into room 9 and held the door shut. What? With her good leg and foot? And if there were others in the room who were not shot, why wouldn't one of them hold the door shut? Because it says here the staff member called back into the room 9 and held the door shut.
Yeah.
Come on, Mr. Sedensky. This is ludicrous. What were the other people doing in there? Cowering in the corner? Were they going to allow someone to crawl back with a bloodied leg to hold the door shut and say, I'm going to do it? Weren't expected to believe this nonsense? You know, Bill, as I was going through this two and a half hours before we went on air, I'm thinking to myself, if someone submitted this script to Law and Order, the show, or any other NYPD Blue, or any other show that's based on has a criminal theme to it, crime drama theme to it, this script would be rejected. They would say, this is totally unbelievable. You know, this is nonsense. I don't want to deal with this. And yet we're supposed to believe this BS. This is what was running through my mind as I was refreshing myself with my notes. This is ridiculous. All right. Let's move on. And, you know, I just want people to know that I'm skipping some of my notes because I'm just trying to get to the stuff that's really, really serious here. Okay. At the same time, this is Sedensky, at the same time the shooter was firing in the hallway, another staff member was at the far east end of the hallway near Classroom 1. The staff member was struck by a bullet in the foot and retreated into a classroom. My comment, this, according to the 911 transcripts, would have to be Sue Perry.
Mm-hmm.
According to the layout of the school, Perry would have to have been about 90 feet from the shooter and his first three victims. You see, because I have a layout of the school and I can do simple arithmetic, that's how I know she was about 90 feet away from the shooter in his first three. What was Perry's description of the shooter? Never heard that. Does it corroborate the description given by office staff? Sue Perry's classroom is at the end of the hallway and to the right. There are 9 classrooms. Think about this, Bill. There are 9 classrooms closer than hers where the actual shooting took place. Mm-hmm. And yet none of the other staff in these 9 classrooms came out into the hallway to see what these loud sounds were. It was only Sue Perry at the end of the hallway. What drew Perry out into the hall?
Yeah. And you know what, Joe? While you're talking there, I was just looking back at Sudensky's footnotes on some of his statements here.
Right.
And when this 9/11 call was made in staff room 9 or room 9, whatever it's called, not only was the call made, but in the ensuing moments, the telephone in room 9 was also used to turn on the school-wide intercom system.
Right.
This appears to have been done inadvertently, but provided notice to other portions of the building. Done
right.
Inadvertently, okay, Joe? Now, here's his comment on, and he leaves a little footnote, and here's his comment. Intercom system could be accessed from 9 phones located in 7 rooms. These telephones and rooms were 3 phones in the main office, the principal's office, the nurse's office, room 57, room 9 conference room, room 29, room 32, and room 60. The, quote, all call, which opens the intercom to the entire school, was accessed by pressing #0 from the telephone. The all call except the quiet rooms was accessed by pressing #1. So inadvertently, #0 and then #1 was pressed so that the whole school could hear what was going on. And yet at the end of the hallway in room 1, there's someone out. Joe, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point, Bill.
Does not make sense.
Not at all. Not at all. And I'll tell you what, Bill, for the sake of time, I'm not going to try to comment unless it's really, really pertinent.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. I will comment on what you just said. Why didn't anyone else in any of those rooms press the alert signal?
Yeah.
The pound and then the 9. Why was it just in conference room 9? Unless you know, theoretically speaking, you already had it done, so why do it again? All right, so that's the answer to my own question. All right. But that's a great point, Bill. Great point. Where are we? We're at 9:01.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving along. You know, Bill, we're coming up on 2 hours at 9:30. This is incredible. This is just incredible. We have 3 hours, correct?
We have 3, yeah.
2 hours live. All right. I'm gonna move on. I'm only on page 10. This is absurd. Sudensky, classroom 8's substitute teacher was Lauren Russo, age 30, who was assisted by Rachel DeVino, age 29, a behavioral therapist. 15 children were found by police, 14 who were deceased, and 1 who was transported to Danbury Hospital. Okay, now I got to stop here. This question has been asked before. Who declared Hochsprung and Sherlock dead? Who declared the 15 children dead?
Mm-hmm.
Under Connecticut state law, only a medical doctor can declare someone to be dead, unless in the case of decapitation. And none of the victims were reported to have been decapitated. Now, someone could say, oh, that's not true. Well, you know, I wanted to find out whether that was true or not, but I was stonewalled, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So I emailed directly the office of the chief medical examiner, who is no longer H. Wayne Carver III, is now James R. Gill, medical doctor. Okay, there's a little box section where you can post comments or questions, and then they will answer, hopefully. Okay, here was my comment. Here was my question to James R. Gill, chief medical examiner. When did I do this? Where is this? February 18th I did this, Bill. February 18th of this year. Question. According to Connecticut state law, who can pronounce / declare death in a victim situation, whether accidental or a criminal situation? Are first responders required by state law to transport crime or accident victims to emergency medical facilities, regardless of whether or not death seems apparent? Is that a reasonable question, Bill?
That's a reasonable question.
Okay. Now, they ask for a category, and I say website. Name, Joseph C. Marotti. Title, independent researcher. Company, Christian Internet Ministry. And then I give my address, my telephone, and my email. Never heard from him. Never heard from him. Why not? And this is back in back on February 18th. I've still not heard from Mr. James R. Gill, the chief medical examiner, with an answer to a simple question. And I don't want to hear any of you debunkers out there answering the question. I want James R. Gill to answer the question. You hear that, Mr. Wade and Mr. Hernandez? I also composed an email, a short email to, he's a Connecticut state official. I don't remember the capacity to which he is employed by the state of Connecticut, but his email address is, his name is Richard Kamen. His email address is RICHARDKAYMIN at Connecticut.gov, and in parenthesis, RICHARDKAYMIN at Connecticut.gov. He has something to do with emergency response bill, and he's employed by the state of Connecticut. Here was my email to him. Richard, I am hoping that you will be able to clear up a matter regarding Connecticut state laws that pertains to who can and who cannot declare slash pronounce the death of a human. My name is Joseph Marodi, and the purpose of this query is to gain official insight, which will be included in personal research into this area. I have contacted the office of the chief medical examiner, but have received no response. I also spoke with someone from Enfield Emergency Medical Services, but could not get a clear answer. And I'll stop there for a second. I also did call and speak with someone on the phone from Enfield EMS, which is not far from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, and I asked them that simple question: who can declare someone dead? Can a paramedic, can an emergency medical response team declare someone, can a nurse? And once I said, I'm researching Sandy Hook, she said, I can't talk to you anymore. I repeat, once I indicated that I am researching Sandy Hook to this Enfield EMS representative, they said, I'm sorry, sir, I can't speak to you anymore. And they hung up. They didn't even say goodbye. They hung up.
Amazing.
Here was my questions to Mr. Richard Kamen. Can a law enforcement officer declare death? Can an RN or any other type of nurse pronounce death? Can a paramedic declare slash pronounce death? Are first responders required to transport accident slash crime victims, even if there is no detectable pulse, to an emergency medical facility? Your response will be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Joseph Marodi. Never heard from Richard Kamen. So you know what? Man, I'm trying to get a real answer from someone. I've contacted three different sources, official sources. Mm-hmm. Apparently they're afraid to answer that simple question. Why give an email address and solicit questions if you're not going to answer them? And we're talking 6 months ago, 5 months ago. So don't tell me they're too busy up there in Connecticut. Please. Sandy Hook was the best thing to happen to that state ever, and we'll find out why if we can get to it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to touch Sandy Hook with a 10-foot pole, Bill. Okay, now we're on page 10 of Mr. Sedensky's report. At the same time, this is Sedensky. At the same time, the shooter was firing in the hallway. Another staff member was at the far east end of the hallway. Oh, did I get to that already? Oh, yeah, I got to that. I'm sorry. I got to that already. Sedensky. Both Dawn Hochsprung, age 47, and Mary Sherlock, age 56, died as a result of being shot. Again, who declared Hochsprung and Sherlock dead? Sedensky. Both wounded staff members shot in the hallway were later evacuated to the hospital and survived. My question, what hospital were these wounded staff taken to?
Mm-hmm.
What was their testimony as to what they witnessed that day? Have they ever given an on-air interview? This seems highly suspicious. given the number of parents from Sandy Hook who can't seem to get enough camera and FaceTime. Sadensky, after shooting and killing the two adults and wounding the two others, the shooter entered the main office. The office staff had taken shelter in the office. They heard sounds of the office door opening, footsteps walking inside the office, and then back toward the office door. Staff members heard the door open a second time. Okay, I'm going to comment. Two of the office staff have been identified as school nurse Sally Cox and secretary Barbara Halstead. Sally Cox stated that she and Halstead had ducked under Cox's computer desk in the nurse's office.
Yeah.
So you have to go through the main office to get to the nurse's office. Two doors. Yet here the staff reports hearing one door open once and then a second time. And if someone claims the office staff mentioned here are other than Cox and Halstead, where could they possibly have taken refuge in the main office? And the shooter takes the time to close the door. Think of that. If they heard it open and then open again, Bill, there would have to be one door. He comes in to the main office, shuts the door, and then opens it again. Because you have to open two doors to get to the nurse's office. You have to go through the main office. So Adam Lanza must have been a very polite mass murderer in shutting the door behind him to the office door. Okay, let's move on here. Staff members heard the door, this is Sadensky, heard the door open a second time and then heard more gunfire from outside the office. My comment. Sarah Cox stated in interviews that she heard popping sounds. But the report here states that gunfire was heard. I've seen all of Sarah Cox's interviews, popping sounds, she said. Trust me. I've heard an AR-15 over the internet. It doesn't make popping sounds. You don't mistake them for the old red tablet pop guns that we used to have, Bill, right?
Yeah.
With a little bit of powder in them, and you put them in the gun, you go, no, an AR-15 is deafening. And then it says, they called 911. My comment, in an interview, Sarah Cox stated she held the phone while Halstead dialed, so this would indicate the main office staff is Sarah Cox and Barbara Halstead. That's it. The main office staff is substantiated here as Sarah Cox and Barbara Halstead. Okay, let's move on now. Sadensky. Where the shooter specifically went next is unclear. The evidence, I'll stop there, my comment. The evidence being the killings were confined to classrooms 8 and 10 east of the main office and that nowhere else in the building was the shooter seen. Sadensky, the evidence and witness statements established the shooter went down the hallway in an easterly direction. My comment. What witnesses could have established this? Cox and Halstead were either under Cox's desk or in the closet by now.
Closet, yeah.
And with the nurse's office separated from the main hallway by the main office, they would not have been able to determine the direction the shooter went. Sadensky, ultimately entering first grade classrooms 8 and 10. The order is not definitely known. Okay, hello, Mr. Sadensky, my comment. If the shooter was found dead in classroom 10, how could the order not be definitely known? Okay, he didn't go to classroom 10 and then die, shoot himself there, and then go to classroom 8, right?
Wow.
And so why would the shooter have bypassed room 10 as well as room 12 and gone first to room 8, killing 17 people and then work his way back to room 10. Sadetsky. Classroom 8 substitute teacher was Lauren Russo, age 30, who was assisted by Rachel DeVino, age 29, a behavioral therapist. 15 children were found by police, 14 were deceased, and one who was transported to Danbury Hospital. The police cannot declare someone dead again. This requires a medical doctor, an EMT, can't even pronounce death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we're going to get into that a little bit later as well, if time allows. Later, Sadetsky, 14 who were deceased and one who was transported to Danbury Hospital and later pronounced dead. Okay, which child was this? What time was death pronounced? And who was the physician? Is that too much to ask which child died at Danbury Hospital?
No.
Why does that have to be classified? Sadetsky, the two adults were found deceased close to the children. Again, who had the authority to pronounce these two adults dead? In all, 17 people were killed in Classroom 8. A 16th child survived and exited Classroom 8 after the police arrived. Okay, who was the child who survived? My comment. Were they wounded? The shooter wouldn't have noticed there was a survivor? How could the shooter have completely missed this child, not even wounding him or her? Moving on. Sadetsky. Classroom 10's teacher was Victoria Soto, age 27. Working with her was Anne Marie Murphy, age 52, a behavioral therapist. Five children were found, with Mrs. Murphy, partially covering one child. My comment. The report here states that Mrs. Murphy was found partially covering one child. Now I want to read from an article, Bill.
Okay.
From CNN. Remember the words partially covering one child from Mr. Sadetsky. This is the Hockleys speaking. This would be Dylan Hockley.
Mm-hmm.
The victim, the alleged victim. This is from the article from CNN on the 14th of January of last year. A few days after the tragedy, the Hockleys ran into Mike Murphy. His wife, Anne Marie Murphy, taught their son at Sandy Hook. He revealed to her that in the terrible aftermath of the attack, first responders found Dylan and his teacher together. Quote, he said that Anne Marie Murphy had been found with her arms wrapped around Dylan. That is what we had hoped for, in a very strange sort of way, to hope for something. But according to Mr. Sadetsky, Mrs. Murphy was found partially covering one child. Another discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. Sadetsky. Four of the five children were deceased. One of the five children was transported to the hospital and pronounced dead. Ms. Soto was found deceased in the room near the north wall with a set of keys nearby. Nine children had run out of the room and survived. We were told six wound up at Jean Rosen's house. So where did the other three children go, Bill?
Good question.
Nine children had run out of the room and survived. But we were told that six wound up at Jean Rosen's house. I read where someone picked up children, doesn't say how many, on Riverside Road beyond Jean Rosen's house, away from the firehouse. Jean Rosen's house was adjacent to the firehouse.
Right.
So apparently these nine kids escaped. Where am I here? Yeah, nine children had run out of the room and survived. Wow, that's amazing in and of itself, Bill, right?
Yeah.
First grade children had the wherewithal to run out of the school, out of the room and out of the school. Okay, so they wind up. So six of them wind up on Gene Rosen's lawn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three others keep going. Why do they keep going?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have all stayed on Gene Rosen's lawn? Just another
question. The real question is, why didn't they all go to the firehouse, which was before Gene Rosen's house?
Well, apparently, I guess the Sandy Hook Volunteer Fire Department personnel were at home watching cartoons that morning. The doors were all shut. So they had to, these kids had to bypass the firehouse and wind up on Gene Rosen's lawn, and the other three continued down Riverside Road, eventually being picked up by a parent, if you want to believe that.
Mm.
All right. Yeah. Moving on. I'll pick up where I left off. Nine children run out of the room and survived. A police officer found two uninjured children in the class restroom. How did these two children not receive any injuries? I can't for the life of me figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Sadensky. The two classrooms on either side of 8 and 10 were numbered 6 and 12. Classroom 6 on the eastern side of classroom 8 and classroom 12 was on the western side of classroom 10. Staff and students hid in the class restrooms, locking the restroom doors from the inside. All right. If the restroom doors could be locked from the inside, why didn't Rousseau, DeVino, lock the kids in the bathroom in classroom 8? Why didn't Soto and Murphy lock themselves and the children in the restroom in class 10? And according to call 4 on the 911 call transcripts, a teacher indicates she has to lock the door. This would indicate that the entry doors from the hallways to the classrooms were able to be locked from the inside of the classroom. So why wouldn't these teachers have locked the entry doors? So you have some people saying, yeah, you could lock the doors from the inside, and others in Sadensky's report here saying, no, you could only lock them with a key from the outside. The absurdity of Sandy Hook is beyond description. It's absurd. Being on an LSD trip, Bill, I've never been on one, but I've heard people describe them. Reading this report is like being on an LSD trip.
Hmm.
You got bathrooms that can lock, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you get all of your students in the bathroom like Kate and Roy said she did? But, you know, Soto and Russo, they don't take them into the – they have to know that the entry doors don't lock, so get them in the bathroom. Why didn't they do that? Where's the answer? Who can answer me that? I'll move on. Are we still on, Bill?
Yeah, Joe, we have about 7 minutes live.
7 minutes live. Page 11. Incredible. Let's just keep going. Look, you're the boss, Bill. You direct where we go here. I'm just going to keep going until you say stop. All right?
Okay. Yep.
Sadensky. Throughout the rest of the school, staff and students hid themselves wherever they happened to be the time they became aware of gunfire. My question to that is, what time were the first shots heard? And the first shots heard would be the entry into the school.
Mm-hmm.
The staff used various ways to keep the children calm, from reading to having them color or draw pictures. Those hiding in rooms closest to the shooter kept silent. Some people were able to escape out of the building prior to the police arrival and went to Sandy Hook Center, nearby residences. or received rides from parents going to the school or from passersby. My comment. Does this mean they exited the building through windows or doors or both? Were these people adults or children or both? If they were just adults who escaped, then I guess not everyone was a hero, because that would mean they left knowing children were still in the building and apparently under gunfire attack. If they were adults leading some children out, then again, they are leaving other children behind. And it's difficult to believe that any entire classes escaped. And there has been no witness testimony to substantiate this, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And this is crucial here as well, Bill.
And Joe, let me add to that.
Yeah, sure.
No video evidence of that escape either.
No, and believe me, I'm going to touch on that in detail either tonight or when we pick up at some point. Yeah, no video evidence of that. None, zero, zilch whatsoever. Let me say this here. As I just read, some people were able to, this is Sedensky, some people were able to escape out of the building, quote, prior to the police arrival. So my question is, did these people escape prior to police arrival in Crestwood and on the driveway near the ball field? The first arrival on Crestwood was 9:39, and on the ball field, 9:39:13.
Mm-hmm.
How was it determined that anyone escaped prior to police arrival? Did these officers not notice people fleeing from the school?
And they were,
at any point describe seeing anyone fleeing from Sandy Hook Elementary School? And according to the appendix, no.
Not into that, Joe. They had to be pretty quick.
Yeah. They had to be real quick.
Fleeing and getting to those residences before anyone could even notice.
It's incredibly absurd. It's beyond, it's Twilight Zone, Bill. I keep going back to that. It's Twilight Zone material. Hello, CWA, you listening out there? Chris Hernandez, hello? Hello? You hearing this? You want to still stand by your story? Well, that's all right. Go ahead. I don't care. Let's move on. Okay. This is the response portion of the report. And before I go any further, if anybody, either those two bozos that I just mentioned, or anyone else can answer any of these questions or explain anything, that's fine. But don't say, oh, I can answer that, or here's how I can describe that. Here's where you're wrong. Don't say because you can answer something that the rest of this isn't legitimate, the rest of my questions aren't legitimate. If you can debunk everything that I'm portraying tonight, everything that I'm putting out as evidence against your claim that Adam Lanza killed 20 students and 6 educators on 12-14-12, if you can debunk everything that I'm that I have here in preparation, and this isn't even all of it, as I said earlier, I'm going to blog the rest of my stuff, then feel free to try, really. You won't be able to. Okay, response, according to Sedensky. 9:38:50, Connecticut State Police are informed that Sandy Hook Elementary School is in lockdown. My comment, this has to be gathered as a result of Rick Thorne's, the custodian du jour.
The custodian du jour
of Sandy Hook on 12-14-12. It has to be gathered from his 911 call, which when you read the transcript of the 911 calls, you really don't know if the school was in lockdown, as we're going to see. 9:39.
Joe, let me stop you right there before you go on.
Yeah.
We're coming down to the last 20 seconds of our live feed. So
sure.
At this time, I want to thank everyone who's tuned in tonight and listening live to Sandy Hook on File, the epilogue. And we're going to continue on into the third hour here. So you can listen to the podcast at www.answersfortheparanormal.org. Okay, Joe.
All right, Bill. All right, give me 1 second to take a drink and to get the rest of my material in front of me. As I said, Bill, I'm skipping over a lot of the stuff that I have because I can kind of get a sense of what is really pertinent for tonight.
Yeah.
But again, you really can't leave anything out of any material that either I or any other Sandy Hook researcher has, because it all points for me, the painfully obvious reality that Sandy Hook really didn't happen. No one died. And you know what's funny, Bill? You remember when this first happened, and there were a few months, maybe even more, that went by that we debated back and forth whether anyone really died or not. We were thinking, maybe federal agents went in there to promote agenda and actually killed these kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that's actually worse than what we're suggesting here. I've come to the conclusion without hesitation that no one died at Sandy Hook, no one whatsoever. So it's important to note that the voluminous amount of material that I have, as well as other researchers, should all be scrutinized and taken into consideration when trying to come to a reasonable conclusion regarding Sandy Hook. So, having said that, I'm going to move on. Again, this is under the response portion of Sedensky's report at 9:39:13. Two more Newtown officers arrive at Sandy Hook Elementary School and park on the driveway near the ball field. Gunshots are heard in the background. Okay, my comment. Nearly 4 minutes after the first 911 call, and you have one officer on Crestwood and two near the ball field, three officers in total? Wouldn't you think the entire Newtown police force would be there right away?
Yeah.
And not parking on Crestwood behind the school or along the ball field 500 feet away from the school. I'm sorry.
Good point.
Okay. I want to read a couple lines from a LA Times article on December 14th. From 2012, which is that the actual incident date. So I don't know how that is. But anyway, I printed it out. It's from the Times. And this is, you can read this on, I think it's the first or second, I think it's the second page of that article. Chris Manfredonia, whose six-year-old daughter attends the school, was heading there Friday morning to help make gingerbread houses with first graders when he heard popping sounds and smelled sulfur. He ran around the school trying to reach his daughter and was briefly handcuffed by police. He later found his child, who had been locked in a small room with a teacher.
Hmm.
Okay. So he hears pop, my comment. So he hears popping sounds and smells sulfur. Again, does an AR-15, when fired, sound like pops? Does it smell like sulfur? He runs around the school trying to reach his daughter? He wouldn't go to the front of the school? He runs around the school?
Hmm.
And where he was encountered by the Newtown officer running along the east side? It's not even close to the front. If you know the layout of Sandy Hook Elementary School, where he was caught, allegedly, is 150 feet away from the front of the school. So he's so concerned about his daughter that he doesn't go. And keep in mind, the front glass is allegedly shot out by now. Okay, so this Chris Manfredonia either has the worst case of a direction challenge in the history of mankind, or this is just a blatant lie. He's running around the school trying to find his child instead of going into the school in the front. Cut me a break. Mm. You're going to see a gaping hole in the front, and then you're going to run around to the other side of the school so you can get caught by a policeman? This is absurd. It's absurd. As I read this, I get ticked off. I really do. Let me continue. Sedensky. Again, under the response section, 9:40:03, last gunshot is heard. This is believed to be the final suicide shot from the shooter in classroom 10. My comment, if the last shot is heard at 9:40:03, why did it take more than 4.5 minutes for Newtown officers to first enter the school? What were they waiting for? They had to have seen the shot out plate glass window. No. What were they doing for those 4 minutes and 44 seconds until the last shot was heard?
And I'm pretty long time, Joe. More...
Yeah, that's a long time. And I'm going to address this because allegedly all these guys are heroes. They're all heroes, according to Mr. Sedensky at the end of his report here. And I don't know if I'm going to get to that by the end of this next hour, but we'll go on. If not, Bill, I'll tell you what. I don't have to do any preparation. I got everything ready for next Friday night if we can do that. But anyway, let's move on. Let's see how far we can get. Sedensky, again, under the response section, 9:41:24. Newtown officer has unknown male prone on ground. Starting information relay regarding possibly more than one shooter. Okay. So it takes a minute and 50 seconds? Because we were told at 9:39:34, Newtown officer encounters an unknown male running along east side of school. That's Manfredonia. Now we're at 9:41:24. Newtown officer has unknown male prone on ground. Starting information relay regarding possibly more than one shooter. Oh, okay. It takes more than a minute and 50 for the officer who first encounters the unknown male running along the east side of Sandy Hook Elementary School to get him proned out on the ground? This guy could have been the killer. Why did it take a minute 50, 110 seconds for the officer to seize him? That's a long time given the circumstances. It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
You point your gun, stop. You go over to him, you get him on the ground. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not law enforcement. I don't have any experience in law enforcement. That's what I've been told. 110 seconds when the first time you see this guy to get him prone on the ground. Count 110 seconds, Bill, and you have a report of shooting at an elementary school. Give me a break. Ridiculous. This is all nonsense, but I gotta go on with it. Let me back up. The exact time that the Newtown officers first enter Sandy Hook Elementary School, and we'll see later that it's not through the gaping hole in the front.
Mm-hmm.
It's through a door on the other side of the school. So that's why it took 4 minutes and 44 seconds between the last shot heard, and even longer, Bill, from the first 911 call. The first 911 call is what? 9:35 something?
35, yeah.
So you're talking 9 minutes. 9 minutes. It's inexcusable. 9:46:23, Connecticut State Police arrive at Sandy Hook Elementary School. The only problem with this is Sedensky's time of arrival for the Connecticut State Police is off by a minute and 13, according to the dash cam videos that I watched. This may seem insignificant, but wouldn't you expect pinpoint accuracy in any district attorney's report, and we're talking here about the worst school shooting in U.S. history, so please get it right, all of it. He's off by a minute 13. Because the first dash cam, and I don't remember the officer's name, that I watched, was at 9:45:10. But Sadesky has here at 9:46:23, Connecticut State Police arrived at Samuel Gorman's. I'm sorry. You know what? I want pinpoint accuracy, Mr. Sadesky. Moving on. He's talking about the detentions here, the detentions of people who are suspected to be the shooters, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The initial unknown male who turned out to be a parent with a cell phone in his hand, that would have been Chris Manfredonia,
yeah,
according to the official story. Sadesky, two reporters located in the woods around Sandy Hook Elementary School who were held at gunpoint by Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, DEEP, police officers until their identities could be determined. All right. Does it make sense that two reporters would endanger their lives by going through the woods to get a scoop?
No.
How did they get there that fast?
It's pretty fast.
And why would officers of Energy and Environmental Protection be the ones making this detention? Why not Connecticut State Police or Newtown officers? This is ludicrous.
Question.
This
it's
is
good
ludicrous.
Question. What were
the
they doing there?
The Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Hello? You're the guys chasing reporters through the woods who could be the shooters? Not the Connecticut State Police or Newtown that were already there?
Maybe they were protecting the ducks, Joe, that were down in that little stream that we, you know, maybe they were protecting those ducks that were down in that little stream that we
in the center of town.
Saw. Yeah.
Yeah, they would just happen to be there, Bill. Just happen to be there. It's amazing all the help that just happened to be there and how fast they got there. Okay, let me move on here, Bill. You know, if I was somebody listening right now, I would have destroyed my bedroom by now with fist holes through the drywall. This is Sadesky. A man from New York, again, this is under the tensions that were allegedly that happened that day, believing that they were the shooters. A man from New York who was working in a nearby town and went to Sandy Hook Elementary School after an application on his cell phone telephone alerted him to the situation at the school. He drove to the firehouse and went up to the school on foot. He was taken from the scene. Okay. So this guy is in a nearby town. He drives to the school, which by now had to have been secure, right?
Uh-huh.
And he parks at the firehouse, which is apparently still unoccupied, and just waltzes. Yeah, go ahead.
And all those vehicles that we saw in the helicopter footage, they're not there yet either, right?
They're not there yet either. He's there first, right? This guy's amazing. He must have a Ferrari. And just waltzes up Dickinson Drive to the school, this guy? For those of you who...
I was whistling as I'm walking up, Joe.
Oh, okay. I just wonder what that noise was.
Can't you see him waltzing down Dickinson?
Yeah, right. Boy, you startled me there for a second. For those of you who don't know, the firehouse was connected. I say was because Sandy Hook was demolished. Okay.
Right.
It was connected to the school by Dickinson Drive. So this man from New York who was working in a nearby town parks at the firehouse, and he walks up Dickinson Drive to the school And remember, Dickens and Drive is the only access to the school.
Yeah.
It would or should have been blocked at this point. Okay. Unless
right.
you want to tell me, you know, that this guy working in a nearby town is going to get there before Newtown Police, is going to get there before Connecticut State
Police. Connecticut State, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just going to waltz. It says here he drove to the firehouse and went up to the school on foot. Okay, so he made it to the school. That's what Mr. Sadetsky is saying. And he was taken from the scene. I mean, how do I comment on this? It's just, it's beyond reason. It's just beyond reason. You can't expect me to believe this. You just can't expect me to believe it.
Is that known, Joe, as like filler? You know, like when you're doing a script for a movie or a play and it's like incidental kind of stuff. So, you know, maybe Sadetsky felt as though he needed a little filler there, so you make up a guy who drives to... It just... That's how absurd
it seems. What else could it be, Bill? What else could it be? Because it makes no chronological sense. It
no.
makes no reasonable sense. It's absurd. It's just absurd. I mean, if I was to write one word on the front of this state's attorney of Connecticut final report for Sandy Hook, Stephen J. Sadetsky, I would write in bold letters, absurd. A-B-S-U-R-D. Because everything in here is absurd.
Or you could write, please use in a birdcage.
Because that's what it's worth, right?
Right.
To be dropped on. Wow. Okay. Moving on. Now, I can fast forward a little bit here to 16, page 16. Let me see what this is under. This is under...
I got to get down there, Joe.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Investigation responsibilities were handled as follows. So this is detailing who the investigators allegedly were that day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the units, federal, state, local. Okay, so on page 16, Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI.
Yeah.
Mr. Sadetsky's words, in addition to responding to the scenes, they handled interviewing of witnesses and investigation both at a local level and on a national level. The tactical team assisted with the clearing of the school. The behavioral analysis unit, as part of the search warrant execution for 36 Yogananda Street, was provided with materials for review. They provided their expertise in the preparation of witness interviews. The victim assistance unit worked with victims' families, victims, and witnesses. Okay, so my comment on is that it has been determined by alleged debunkers that there is no need for the FBI to declassify its files on Sandy Hook. They're classified. That the bulk of the investigation was performed by local Newtown and state Connecticut state law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But this paragraph highlights the extensive work and involvement from the FBI. So again, why has the FBI classified its files on Sandy Hook? Okay. This is under the description of Sadetsky's portion of the interior of the Sandy Hook Elementary School. He's describing the main entrance and what was found there. Glass shards were located just before and to the side of the outside entrance doors on the patio and plantings in the area, and also on the floor in the lobby. 8 expended brass-colored 5.56 millimeter bullet casings stamped with S&B 65.56x45 were located in the area outside the broken window and the front entrance doors. These were seized. Okay. My comment. Yeah, how does that happen? That's not even in my comments, Bill, but yeah. Look, I'm not saying it can't happen, but if you shoot a window out, does it blow in the glass shards, or do some of them actually blow backwards? I don't know. They could. I don't know. But here's my comment on that. In Barbara Sibley's interview with Katie Couric, she stated that she encountered another mother at the entrance of the school. If you remember, Barbara Sibley gave an interview that her son had forgotten something at the school and she drove back there to drop it off.
Yeah.
So she says in an interview with Katie Couric that she encountered another mother at the entrance of the school. Sibley said that the mother said to her, quote, look, referring to the broken glass that they would have had to have been stepping on, as well as eight bullet casings.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to assume Sibley recounted or gave the same testimony to interviewers from law enforcement personnel. My problem with her testimony is, why would this other mother need to point out to Sibley that there was broken shards of glass all around their feet and a 3 foot by 3.5 foot gaping hole in the plate glass window next to the front doors? And Sibley never mentioned seeing any spent shell casings on the ground in that interview.
No.
It's another incident. A witness, alleged Barbara Sibley, she was there when Adam Lanza allegedly was still in the building and before emergency first responders got there. So I have to take her at her word. She had to have the mother say, hey, look, you're stepping on glass shards. Oh, and also look at the 3.5 foot hole in the window, in the plate glass window here.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, crazy, to say the least. Okay. Let's see. Description of the north hallway from Mr. Sedensky. The north hallway, which is where the shootings allegedly took place. Mr. Sedensky, the doors in the hallway all locked from the outside with a key. The interior door handles had no locking mechanism. My comment, why in the world would you only be able to lock classroom doors from the hallway? In a very recent history of school shootings where you could and should foresee the possibility that you may need to lock your own classroom doors to prevent a shooter from gaining easy access to your room and your students. You know, we're not talking about $1 million here. Just change the locks. Get new locks so that they lock from the inside. This very fact makes it impossible for me to reconcile that no lawsuits were filed against the school district. I repeat, no lawsuits were filed against the school district. If I was a parent there, it would have been up to me to say, hey, your doors don't lock. At some student, teacher, parent union, when you go through the school for your students, you would say, doors don't lock from the inside, only from the outside with the key. So that would have been my responsibility. But after the fact, I would have said, wait, your doors don't lock from the inside? So you made it easy for Adam Lanza, the shooter, to get into these classrooms to kill my kid? Lawsuit. Malfeasance. Misfeasance. Also, Bill, let me add, the statement here that the doors locked only from the hallway outside contradicts Shari Thornburg's account, a teacher. We will see this later. So we're going to have another profound contradiction.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. I am up to now page 20. We're almost halfway through. This is, again, under Sedensky's descriptions of the interior of the school, Classroom 12. Classroom 12 was located on the north side of the north hallway and was the first classroom east of the front lobby. The classroom door was located 23 feet east of the lobby. The window to the door was covered on the hallway side with dark colored paper that was there from a previous lockdown drill.
Hmm?
My comment. Yeah, my comment. The window was covered with a dark colored paper from a previous drill. When was this drill? Why wouldn't the paper have been removed? So what was the drill, the day before? 2 days before? We're never told that. We're told that this paper was on the door on the hallway side, the black paper on the hallway side. Why wouldn't it have been removed? Caitlin Roig. Oh, I still have the paper on my door. Let me take it off. And if the paper was on the hallway side, why wouldn't the shooter have removed it, since this would be the first classroom with potential victims? And why? Why would the paper be on the hall side of the door? Wouldn't the purpose of the paper be to make it difficult for invaders to see into the classrooms? Let me repeat again from Mr. Sedensky. Classroom 12 was located on the north side of the north hallway and was the first classroom east of the front lobby. The classroom door was located 23 feet east of the lobby. The window to the door was covered on the hallway side with dark colored paper that was there from a previous lockdown drill. And what's the point of a lockdown drill if you're unable to lock the doors from the inside of the classrooms?
Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Sedensky again. He's describing Classroom 10. The door that provided, this is amazing, Bill. People, stay with me here. The door that provided access to Classroom 12 was on the center of the west wall. This had a key lock on both sides, and the door was unlocked. I repeat, this had a key lock on both sides, and the door was unlocked. So my comment is this, Bill. This door between rooms 12 and 10 could be locked on both sides. All the classrooms had rooms, had doors between the rooms. And apparently, according to this report, the doors between those rooms had locks
on both sides.
And yet the classroom doors can only be locked from the hall side. The doors that allow entry from the hall into the classrooms themselves could only be locked from the outside. Okay, let's move on. Here's a real brilliant statement from Mr. Sedensky. The classroom door that opened into the north hallway could only be locked with a key from the outside. Hallway side. The door was unlocked with no signs of forced entry. If the door was unlocked, obviously there would be no need for forced entry. You know, Bill, I feel like I'm going over a bad script here. I seriously do. Okay. Sedensky, again, description of Classroom 10. In the window area for Classroom 10, there were no less than 9 holes consistent with being bullet holes. Investigators conducted a trajectory analysis of the shots that went through the window area of Classroom 10. No determination could be made as to whether the shots through the window area were intended for the outside of the building. In other words, it could not be determined whether the shooter, while in Classroom 10, had intentionally fired at something or
Someone.
Let me get to it here. Someone outside of the building. There was no indication that any shots through the window area of Classroom 10 came from outside of the school. All of the evidence indicates that shots went out of the window area of Classroom 10 and into the parking area north of the school. Comment. Why would the shooter fire at least 9 rounds at the windows? He can't be shooting at the children, and here's why. This is room 10. Okay. This is from an article from CBS. The heading of the article, the title of the article is, "For Sandy Hook Survivors, Fear Permeates Young Lives. Children Struggling to Overcome Horrors of Massacre." Okay. In the article, it says this. As the sound, and this is the description of room, classroom 10. As the sound of gunfire and shells hitting the floor rang out from the hallway, the children in Victoria Soto's class, that's classroom 10, were moved to the back of their room. They were sitting on the floor when Lanza burst through the door. Okay, so again, I ask, why would the shooter fire at least 9 rounds at the windows? He would have to have been shooting at someone outside, right? Which means that he didn't kill himself as he saw a law enforcement approach, right? That's what we're told. That's what we're told in the story, that Adam Lanza, as he saw law enforcement approach, he knew he had no chance against these guys, so he ended his life. Apparently, that's not the case. Did law enforcement ever indicate shots were directed towards them from the inside of the school? No.
No.
Not as far as what I read in the appendix. Not so far. No. And if I'm wrong about that, I'll correct myself. But apparently, a couple slugs made it to Lauren Russo's car, as well as two other cars. And this is something to remember, Bill. The report states that the shooter killed himself around 9:40, and the first Newtown police arrived at the school at 9:39.
Mm-hmm.
And the first officer didn't enter the school until 9:44, four minutes after the shooter. Right, 4 minutes after the shooter died. So who was the shooter aiming for? Firing at least 9 rounds indiscriminately out the windows? And remember, the first officers to arrive were on Crestwood, behind the school, and the ball field, 500 feet away. So who is Lanza shooting at? If these guys didn't arrive until 9:39, and the last shot is heard at 9:40,
mm-hmm.
What did they do? They ran right to the front of the school? I don't think so. We'll see that didn't happen from their own words. So who the heck is this guy shooting at? This is the greatest mystery in the history of mankind, Bill. Sandy Hook. Moving on, page 21. Now we're down to classroom 8. Classroom 8 was located on the north side of the north hallway and was the third classroom east of the front lobby, with its entrance door approximately 27 feet east of classroom 10. As with the others, its classroom door opened out into the hallway and could only be locked from the hallway side with a key. The window was not covered. The classroom door to the hallway was unlocked with no signs of forced entry. Again, my comment, this must be repeated, Bill, again. No sign of forced entry because it couldn't be locked from the inside. The just what was the plan here at Sandy Hook Elementary School in the event shooters entered the school? I'm thinking out loud here. Looks like it was up to the custodian to run around locking all the doors, Bill,
mm-hmm.
of an emergency. It's absurd to even consider. Talk about making slaughter easy for a killer or killers.
Mm-hmm.
Why not enable the door to be key locked inside the classroom by the teacher? You had this dual function on the doors between the classrooms, and yet no civil lawsuits from any of the victims' families, nor from any of the families of the other 600 students at the school.
Yeah.
You know, for trauma. Don't just confine your thinking to the 20 alleged victims and the 6 alleged adult victims. Think about the 600 or so other victims who were there, who were traumatized. No lawsuits.
Yeah, which leads you to believe, Joe, that Connecticut is devoid of ambulance chasers.
Well, that would be a first.
Yeah.
That would truly be a first.
Yeah, because anything like this, Joe, you have lawyers showing up by the boatload handing out their cards.
That's how they make their money, Bill. That's how it's an easy lawsuit. Easy lawsuit. Tell me this doesn't send up a red flag. Come on. Let's move on here. Okay, description of Classroom 6 and 4. Located on the floor of Classroom 6 was one live-round federal tactical 12-gauge shotgun slug shell. This shotgun shell was made of a clear-like plastic and was different in color from the shotgun shell that was seized on the shooter's person. On the floor of the classroom 4 was a blue-colored 12-gauge slug shotgun, 12-gauge shotgun slug shell with the word Federal Premium Tactical Rifled Slug stamped on the side and 12-gauge made in USA stamped on the head of the shell. My comment, Bill, while this may be easily dismissed by most, I find it troubling that 2 shotgun shells from federal mm-hmm. officers are just dropped on classroom floors in a crime scene. And it again reminds me of the significant role of the FBI that they played here, and that their file on Sandy Hook is being classified as not only suspicious, but malfeasant on their part.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give you a quick definition, Bill. From Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary. Anybody can check this. The word classified, if you look it up. Withheld from general circulation for reasons of national security. Go to your Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary and look up classified. Withheld from general circulation for reasons of national security. Now, what in the world does a school shooting that apparently has been neatly wrapped up, one shooter, he's dead, no co-conspirators, what could Sandy Hook possibly have to do with national security? It's absurd. And, you know, before I go on, Bill, and I don't know, the FBI file may have been declassified, but if they're going to put that up on the website and have 99% of it redacted, don't please tell me declassified if it's redacted like that, like the Connecticut State Police report. You might as well have kept it classified if you're going to redact it like that. You're not telling me anything. You're not proving anything. Ridiculous. We got 20 minutes left, though. How do you want to handle this? I'm on page 22.
Yeah, you got. Well, let's go for 10 more.
Page 22. This is Sadensky talking about the shooter. Responding police officers found the shooter in classroom 10 northwest of the hallway entrance, dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. A comment. There is no indication here the shooter was found dead near windows facing the parking lot. Northwest of the hallway entrance is indicating the wall adjacent to room 12. Now, you really got to check this out.
Mm-hmm.
We were told Lonza shot himself as he saw law enforcement approaching the school. He's not near the windows.
Hmm.
So what? He saw them approaching,
ran
by
the
windows, and then he ran away from the windows and killed himself?
Right.
Again, at this point, you have Newtown police officers chasing Chris Manfredoni along the east side of the school. Either the first officer on Crestwood at 9:39 or the two that arrived at 9:39:13 and parked on the driveway near the ball field, again, quite a distance from classroom 10, with a parking lot full of cars also obscuring the shooter's view from any law enforcement. So how did they determine that he killed himself because he saw law enforcement approaching the building? That just sounds good. You know, Bill, it just sounds good. It's a good story. And why did the shooter fire at least 9 rounds out of the windows of classroom 10? Again, Sedensky, talking about the weapons on the shooter and the ammunition in classroom 10. Officers found 253 live rounds on the shooter's body, 116 9mm rounds, 75 rounds of 10mm, 51 rounds of 5.56mm, and one 12-gauge shotgun shell. Officers also seized 46 5.56mm live rounds. Total live rounds seized were 312. So why did he kill himself if there were more potential victims and he had live rounds remaining? He had 312 unspent rounds of ammunition. This person appeared to be ready for war, Bill, and he kills himself?
Yeah.
So in the same way that no motive has yet to be even supposed, let alone substantiated, cannot make any sense of the timing of the shooter's suicide. All right. I'm going to get through this last page, Bill, page 23, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the exterior description by Sedensky as CDMC, that's Connecticut Major Crimes Process, the exterior of Sandy Hook Elementary School. The shooter's car. The shooter's car was found parked in front of the school, of the front entrance, next to a no parking zone.
Mm-hmm.
My comment. In Barbara Sibley's interview with Katie Couric, she stated that when she observed the black Honda Civic, all the doors were open. Why would one assailant leave all of the car doors open? Because if you remember, Bill, the Izmash Sega 12 shotgun was allegedly found by a law enforcement officer, Newtown, I guess, in the front passenger compartment.
Right.
And then he unbelievably moves it to the trunk for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So why are the back two doors open? What's the shooter going for in the back?
Good question.
And I want to elaborate a little bit on the moving of the shotgun. This is Sedensky. The shotgun and ammunition were originally seen in the passenger compartment of the car and were moved by police to the car's trunk for safekeeping during the initial response and evacuation. So not just the shotgun, also ammunition. Again, this is my comment. This is an absurd move. If you're concerned that this weapon may be used by assailants, why move it to the trunk? Anyone can open the trunk to retrieve it since the officers didn't close and lock the car. So you're disturbing evidence for what purpose? Why wouldn't the officer just take the weapon and secure it somewhere else? If there are potential shooters in the area, aren't you exposing yourself by grabbing the rifle, popping open the trunk, going to open the trunk, then closing it? It just makes no sense. You're a sitting duck for potential shooters. And not only that, there may be more shooters. I'm going to move this to the trunk because they probably don't have a key or a electronic opener. What do you call them? An automatic opener. You press the button and it pops the trunk open. I mean, police academy did these guys graduate from? All right, let's move on. Parking lot. Sedensky. There were a number of cars parked in the north parking lot of Sandy Hook Elementary School. Three of these cars were struck by gunfire. None of the cars struck belonged to law enforcement. A total of 5 strikes to those cars were identified as having come from Classroom 10. It could not be determined whether these shots were intended to go outside of the classroom. My comment. How does one reconcile this with the rest of the shooting spree? The shooter apparently is there to kill women and children, with only 2 wounded, and yet there appears to be indiscriminate firing into the parking lot. There's no rhyme or reason here, Bill.
No.
All right. This is where I'm going to end for tonight, Bill. This is under the heading in Sedensky's report, Sandy Hook Elementary School Autopsy Information. Sedensky, deceased victims were removed from the school building to a large military-style tent located in the north parking lot near the front of the school. The office of the chief medical examiner sought to make positive identification of the victims through photos, school records, and personal and clothing descriptions. My comment, and I can barely bring myself to comment on this portion of the report, Bill.
Yeah.
We know from H. Wayne Carver's infamous press conference on 12/15/12 that he did not allow the parents to see the children. The report here states that Carver made the IDs through photos, school records, and personal and clothing descriptions. Now, if you're using photos, then I must assume at least some, if not all, of the children's facial features were recognizable. Think about this. So why not allow the parents to ID their own children? Wouldn't you think they would know their own children? Parents be able to identify at least clothing? This is obscene. Carver stated in his press conference that he would decide at what point during the grieving process that the up close and personal should take place between the parents and their deceased children. Who is he or anyone else to decide when that time should be? And I didn't hear even one parent that had a problem with this. It's just not a possibility.
It's not.
And I have come across some debunkers, Bill, stating that you never bring the victims' families to the crime scene. To the crime scene. Kidding. Hey, Sherlock. This wasn't in the school.
Right.
This was in the large tent, the temporary morgue in the parking lot. The parents should have been allowed in that tent. And by the way, what if a parent said, screw you. I want to see my child. What would they have done? And not one of them did. And Bill, not one of them did that. Screw you. Get out of my way. I want to see my child. 20 yep. dead kids? 40 parents? You want me to believe this? I'm ready to put my fist, believe me, Bill, through my drywall here now. That's why I got to end it right now.
Yeah.
And we're only up to page 20. We're up to page 23. 24.
Amazing.
When we pick up.
Yeah, and we will do that next Friday, June the 27th, at 7:30 p.m. again. So, for those listening to the podcast, to the third hour of our broadcast, tune in again next Friday to hear the remainder of this document, and I use that term loosely to
yeah.
be put on trial. At which time we'll go on painstakingly going through this report and pointing out all of the discrepancies and all of the information that just doesn't add up when you
right.
really stop and think about what's going on. And not only that, but outright contradictions that
right,
that we'll encounter. So, we look forward to doing that again on next Friday. So what we want to do now is we want to segue into to the last part of our broadcast now with the last 7 minutes that we have and talk to you about a spiritual matter. And that is something that we that we really want to do in each one of our broadcasts is to end it with good news, with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you know, as you're going through something like this, it you know, as Joe just talked about, it brings some indignation to you, and you know, you really want to see justice brought about by something such as this. And you know, it does have a spiritual connotation to that, in that when you talk about justice and God being the judge and the one who judges perfectly, mankind is under judgment of God. And the reason for that is that we are all under a death sentence. We are all under the penalty of sin that each one of us carries because of first of all Adam, the first man, and what he brought into the world. The Bible tells us that by one man's trespass that death came into the world. And it was because of Adam's sin that we all physically die. But not only does physical death come to all humans, but we are all spiritually dead in our sins and in our trespasses. And the Bible tells us that the wages of sin is death. It's what we are all under because of what we do. And sin is quite simply described in the scriptures as a breaking of God's law.
Yes.
And we all break God's law every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the scriptures make clear that when we break one of God's commands, we are guilty of breaking them all.
Yes.
And so we're under a death sentence. And the Bible tells us that none are righteous. None of us, none of the works that we do can declare us righteous in God's sight. So even the good things that we do are to him as filthy rags, the scriptures state. So there's nothing good that we can do that can pay the penalty for our sins and our trespasses. And so since mankind can't do anything to pay for his own sin, God in his mercy and in his love provided a way for sin to be paid. And Joe's going to continue to tell us how that sin was paid.
That sin was mercifully paid by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ when over 2,000 years ago he went to the place of the skull, Golgotha, Calvary, the cross, because he was the perfect Lamb of God who was guilty of no sin, who lived a perfect, unblemished life. That is why he is called the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. There was only one man who ever walked the face of the earth and never committed one sin. And when I say one sin, I'm talking about perfect judgment in God's eyes. In man's eyes, they can look at someone and say, man, they've lived a glorious life, that just wonderful person. But I'm talking about God's law, God's perfect law, as Bill mentioned earlier, the perfect judge. So in 33 years of life, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ walked without sinning from his first years to his teen years to his 20s and into his 30s. His blood was innocent. And when he went to the cross, it was poured out for the remission of sin, because in Hebrews we are told without the shedding of blood there is no remission of sin. And what has to be remembered is that this atonement